two pin swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, July 15th, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. And Chet, we're going to talk some Phillies tonight. They're off to a 29-62 start here at the All-Star break with a trade deadline looming, and we're going to talk about that. We have Joel Embiid on the shelf for another season, and the Sixers made a blockbuster trade since we had our last show. Football season's right around the corner for Eagles fans, and what a week for South Jersey's Carly Lloyd and Mike Trout.
Yeah, Bill, a great week for Jersey. You can add home run derby champ Todd Frazier to that list. He grew up in Toms River and is a Rutgers alum. But no, not such a hot week for the Sixers or Phillies, that's for sure. But the good news is we have a guest tonight who's going to tell us how to fix all of the Fightin' Phil's problems.
You're right. And tonight we're going to welcome Comcast Sportsnet Phillies reporter Leslie Goodell to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable. And Chet, it's going to be interesting to get Leslie's view on the Philly season and how this turned into such a disaster. I think our 99 and 102 losses we predicted may not have a chance. I think we're low. So we'll talk to her about that. And we also will have our trivia question tonight around 7:30. And the prize for tonight's trivia question is an 8x10 color photo signed by the LCB line, Reggie Leach, Bobby Clark, and Bill Barber, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first caller that can call in and correctly answer our trivia question. But we'll get back to that so we don't take up any more Leslie's time. And so, Leslie, welcome to your very first visit to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Leslie. Thanks for joining us. This is Chet. And before we talk about the multitude of Phillies problems, let me ask you this. How much fun was it covering and watching the Phillies between 2007 and 2011, all those division titles, a couple of World Series trips? And is it more of a challenge now in a season like this when they're losing two-thirds of their games?
Well, like every Phillies fan, I felt like I earned it because I started covering the Phillies in 1997, which at this point in that year was equally as bad, if you remember correctly.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I'll have to take a glance and see. But the records were not too far apart in where they were then and where they are right now. So, I think by the time, to me, I always look back and there were certainly wonderful moments. But I think one of my favorite moments was in 2007. When they made the playoffs for the first time in so long, and the elation and excitement that surrounded that team and how all that hard work had culminated in that victory made a big difference in the way that that team was perceived and how that team felt about themselves, and it just carried over for the next few years.
Yeah, so it is a challenge now. Of course, expectations were low for this Philly season, and I guess you could say the team played to those expectations. Right now they're on pace for 109, 110 losses. Is this about what you expected or worse?
This is worse. I think this is worse than what everybody expected. It's tough to look at any team this point in the season and see the mounting losses. The way that they've lost some of them, that's obviously made it very difficult. And I think, overall, just looking at this team, you expected the veterans who are here to have done more. And that, I think, is where the biggest disappointment comes in.
Leslie, the trade deadline is looming. There's a ton of rumors out there. You're with these guys all the time. Where do you start? Where do you get the best bang for the buck to try to right this ship in some reasonable amount of time?
Well, I'm one of those that doesn't like the idea of trading Cole Hamels, but I see the reality and I see what should happen and what needs to happen, and you're going to get the most for Cole Hamels. Jonathan Papelbon, if he could just keep his mouth shut, would be somebody who would continue to at least open some eyes, because he's a good pitcher. He gets out there on the mound, and if he's not talking and he's just playing baseball, he is a valuable asset to a team, particularly one that really has a chance this year and is in need of a closer.
Yeah, I'm interested also in to see if, Ben Revere is a guy that I feel like can bring some value, a little bit of value to this team, but he's a 300 hitter, and we don't have any 300 hitters, so if you move him, where do you go? You bring up another young guy, or where do you go? And Revere is, he starts out slow every year, but he ends up hitting right around 300. He can run the bases, and I think he's a pretty good player, as Chet knows, but it seems like moving into the All-Star break, he was getting more and more days off, which then he'd get it back in the lineup and he'd get two more hits.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Ben Revere, he went down a couple years ago right as he was sitting astride, and, you said he can run the bases. Unfortunately, I think he runs the bases very poorly. He is one of the least intelligent baseball players I've ever seen on the base paths. He makes more mistakes on the base paths. That said, yes, he's a commodity that they'll get something for. So I do think that there is something to be said for what Ben can bring to the table. I'm not worried about the future of the outfield at the moment, because I think that there are enough bodies right now to be able to fill the gap. I think you can get free agents. I think, when you're talking long term, if you can get anything right now for any of the players who are not in your long term plans, then go get them.
You mentioned Hamels, Leslie. I know we all have a kind of a sentimental attachment to him, but I think if they're going to trade him, they should do it before the end of July, because as a couple of writers have pointed out, this is going to be a busy off season for free agent pitchers. David Price, Johnny Cueto, Jordan Zimmermann all hitting the free agent market, maybe even Zach Greinke. He's got an option. So it may do the Phillies better to trade him now rather than wait till the off season.
Yeah, I think also if you're looking ahead at what the Phillies are going to do pitching-wise and picking up down the road, I mean, who's going to want to come here right away until you get to a point where it's a little, you have a little bit. I mean, Jonathan Papelbon has said that he came here to win, and we gave him the money in Philadelphia. So if the Phillies were willing to give him the money and he saw, and they're coming off a 102-win season, you're going to get a guy who's interested. Somebody like that's worthwhile right now is not going to, in this off season, say, I see the future with the Phillies right now. And that's what concerns me is, you've got to be able to have guys who can go out there and give you some innings. And I know Cole is the guy you've got to go out there and get rid of. I just have such a hard time thinking about what they're going to do in their pitching rotation in the immediate future.
Leslie, one of the real mysteries to me on this ball club, and it's been this way for the last 3 or 4 years, is Dominic Brown. It seems like the Phillies have tried for several years to almost give him a job, and he can't ever seem to win the job. He ends up going down to Lehigh Valley and really didn't perform all that well down there. Finally got the call, and he's still hovering a little over 200. I mean, how many chances does this guy get?
Yeah, so that's a very good question, and I think that his chances are running out. I like Dom as a person. I think that he's an example of a guy who was probably coddled quite a lot when he was younger, and I think that he's seen the writing on the wall and had the right experiences in the last year to know what he has to do, and I'm just not seeing it. I don't know where the disconnect is. We've seen him get hot. We know what he can do when he gets hot. But why is there – it's not even inconsistency. It is just – it's either there or it's not. And more often than not, it's been not there for him. And he has all of the physical characteristics of a guy who should be excelling as a professional athlete. He's strong, he's big, but it just isn't clicking for him. And that's, you know, and it's really disappointing because think of how what a future they anticipated him having here in Philadelphia. And it'll be really disappointing if it comes to an unceremonious end.
Now, one guy who has not been a disappointment this year is Michael Franco. He's certainly been a bright spot, the rookie third baseman hitting .284 with 10 homers and 34 RBI in just 55 games. Is he for real, and what is his upside?
You know, Chet, this goes back to what you were saying about is it hard, you know, how hard is it to cover this team now? There's always stories like this. There is always a bright spot. There's always something to look forward to. There's always people coming up next. And Michael Franco has been an absolute pleasure to watch. He's embraced everything about being a professional ball player. He's there to answer questions, even if his English is still very raw. He's trying very hard. He doesn't call for an interpreter. He speaks to the media. He wants to he wants to be accountable there. And I think that counts for something, you know, somebody who's putting everything into it from top to bottom. And he is just, you know, he just got comfortable this year. He finally looked comfortable and not like he was trying to prove something like he was last September. And I think that made a big difference. And I think the decision to start him at AAA was a smart one by the organization.
Plus, it gives the Phillies control of him for another season, which is important.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Another bright spot for the Phillies has been Cesar Hernandez. Unfortunately, since Ruben proclaimed him the second baseman of the future, he's like 2-for-21, but hey, what are you going to do?
Right.
What do you think of Hernandez, and how's this whole thing with Utley going to play out when Utley comes back?
Yeah, I think it's very disappointing because you hate to see somebody who is an icon in Philadelphia sports history take a nosedive like this, and it's been a dramatic fall. I know that retirement hasn't been talked about, and according to Ruben, he hasn't heard Chase talk about retirement, thinks he has something left in the tank. You know, that's fine. If you can move Ryan and you can put Chase at first base and he can be productive again, and you know, I think ultimately that could play out, but you know, there's a lot of ifs there. And I thought he would have popped out of it by now. But if his ankle has been the source of this and he gets his ankle healthy, he deserves another shot. Is he going to get that shot? I mean, if Cesar Hernandez is, you know, 2-for-21, Chase is going to get that opportunity to be in there, you know, particularly against right-handed pitchers. So I think we will see other opportunities for him. You know, the end of this season is going to be very interesting. I know I mentioned 1997 earlier, and I talked about how it was not, you know, it was very similar at this point in the season. I looked it up right after I said that. Through 91 games in 1997, they were 27-64. So they were worse off through 91 games in 1997 than they are now. They traded Darren Dalton by the 27th of July of that year. They were 30-72. That was their low water mark of the year, 42 games below 500. And they finished the season 68-94. So they turned things around with virtually nobody. Whitey passed away. Dutch was traded. They were dismantling that club. And, you know, who knows what it was that sparked that team, but they started winning in August and September. And, you know, it became a different story in how they finished. Now, do I think this team has that in them? I think they do. They certainly had the I didn't think they'd be this far down. But, you know, we still have a lot of baseball left to play before we're, you know, giving them 120 losses this season.
Well, Leslie, you mentioned about moving Ryan and moving Chase over to first base. So, you know, what's your take on the whole Ryan Howard thing? You know, his numbers are actually somewhat reasonable to last year. His home run numbers actually, you know, if you push them out, will be a little higher, and the RBI is about the same. But he's a 225 hitter now, Yep. Do you see them being able to actually move him, or you think we're going to play this out until the end of the year as well?
They have to eat they're going to have to eat a huge amount of his contract, which I understand they're willing to do. So, you know, if the right suitor comes along and Ryan can give something, give a little pop to a team that needs it, that's a big chunk. But you know what you get with Ryan Howard, and like you said, the numbers are consistent with him now. We know what we have at this point in the season. He is, at this point in his career, he is more fit than I have seen him in recent years. I think he's in better condition than he's been since before his Achilles injury. And I think he's very dedicated in a way I've not seen him before, from what I've heard, and just in all facets and really putting everything into it. So, and it took him a long time to get back from that injury, but we know what we have now. So the question is, does the team want a guy, you know, that's gonna give you the numbers that we know he's gonna give you, and be, you know, and the Phillies being willing to eat that salary? I think the Phillies will eat the salary. It's who's the team that would want that.
Another thing we have, Leslie, is a new team president, Andy McPhail. He's observing, I guess, over the next few months. Is there any chance that GM Ruben Amaro is not dismissed at the end of the season? You know, how's this all going to play out?
You know, I'm having a harder time as we get deeper and deeper into this. I felt like the McPhail press conference, and I don't know Andy McPhail. I've heard nothing but good things about him. But I think that suddenly Ruben was in a different place. Here, all these questions were being asked about Ruben. He's standing in the crowd. And McPhail has to take a hard look at things. It's very difficult to see how you move ahead with Ruben as the GM. And, after this season, I just don't see that one playing out. I see them parting ways. Because if you're going to change things, you have to dramatically change things. And look, I look back on Ruben's tenure, and I don't have as people look back on some of his trades, there were certainly some mistakes that were made. It's very hard to trace a lot of trades that pan out with prospects, with numerous prospects, where those prospects go on and become major league players. The same goes with the players that the Phillies have given away in some cases. I mean, you look at Gio Gonzalez and some others that, you know, are a different story. But, you know, for the most part, a lot of those guys don't go on to make it in the majors. Tommy Joseph, that's a huge disappointment. You know, that really looked like a good trade at that point for what you were going to get at catcher in the future. I will say, I think for the first couple of years, I thought, wow, this guy's having a horrible string of bad luck as GM. He'd bring in guys who look like really good additions, only to have them break down. And so there was a point in time where I used to ask people, if you, when this trade happened, or when this, what did you think of it? Oh, I liked it. But when it doesn't pan out, it's glaring. And then I think just moves in the last couple of years have really made a big difference.
Leslie, I asked this to all kinds of fans and friends and people, and, you know, the answer is always the same. Philly fans, of course, are a little fickle anyway. We know that because we are
yeah.
them. But, you know, was it worth it? You know, was it worth being where we are now and being in the bottom of the barrel, but was it worth winning all that to get here? And almost always everybody says yes, but then the same people don't watch the games anymore because they stink.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't – you know, it's funny because when I got here in 1997, the only team that was any good was the Flyers. They had gone to the Stanley Cup Finals against Detroit that year when they were swept in the finals. Other than that, the Eagles, the Sixers, and the Phillies were really in the toilet. And I've seen the city climb out of that, and it seems they're back there. Obviously, the Eagles are not in the position that they were in before. But I think the cyclical aspect of sports in Philadelphia, really, the pendulum swings way far to each side, it seems. And there's consistency in winning like the Eagles have done for the most part. Year after year in the last, you know, two decades. And the Eagles fans seem just they're excited every year about the team, but they don't win the big one. So is that better? I mean, I kind of look at the Eagles and then I look at the Phillies. You've got two different approaches to year in and year out ability to win games. So, I don't know. Personally, I think that it was a really strong run, and they had they built up to it. So there was a lot of building up that people got to enjoy as well for a couple of years building up to it with the prospects coming up. So excitement built around that team. So I really don't look at 2008 as being like it was the pinnacle, but it was also, the culmination of several years leading up to that. So there was a long stretch of enjoyment with that team that I think people don't really realize. It was a little longer than those couple of years they're thinking about.
Absolutely.
All right. Leslie, we appreciate your insight on all things Phillies. Now, Bill, hit the music.
This is my fight song. Take back my life song.
Leslie, we're playing a bit of Rachel Platten's fight song because I know that's one of your daughter's favorites. And we now want to spend a few minutes talking about a scary health issue that Kendall's been dealing with since last fall. Tell us how it all came to light and how she's doing today.
I appreciate you taking some time for that as well. My daughter had a stroke. She's 11 years old. She was 10 at the time. She had a stroke in October of last year. We were headed to a softball tournament, and she said, I don't mean to complain, but my foot's not working very well. I've tripped into the refrigerator, and she didn't realize at the time her left hand wasn't working very well. And, long story short, by the time we got to Bryn Mawr Hospital, her left eyebrow was drooping, and they immediately put her in an ambulance and sent her to DuPont, where we were told that she had a large AVM. And, of course, we had no idea what that was. It's a rare condition. Less than 1% of people have it. It is a vein malformation in her brain, and hers happens to be quite large, and it's really like it looks like spaghetti, and these veins do nothing except take high flow of blood through the AVM, and they can, because of the high flow of blood, it eventually causes a rupture, and most people don't find them until they're between 20 and 40 years old, and obviously, we now look back at it and consider ourselves lucky because she's here to tell us about it and here to talk about it and here to try to fight it. And not everybody's always that lucky. So she's had two radiation treatments on her brain at Stanford University. It's strangely enough, there's no one in the city of Philadelphia that could help us with this. No one that helps adolescents with inoperable AVMs. Hers is deep in her brain, so they couldn't operate. Mike Patterson had an AVM. People may remember that, but he was one of the fortunate ones in that he had a seizure and he had it surgically removed. There's a Princeton football player that had an AVM rupture, and he had it surgically removed. Corey Weissman at Gettysburg. In fact, there's a great movie called 1,000 to 1. It's a Corey Weissman story, and he was a basketball player at Gettysburg, and he had an AVM rupture. So there are a number of athletes in the area that have actually been touched by this, but they've all been fortunate enough to be able to have it surgically removed. And for Kendall, she's having radiation treatment. She's had two, and God willing, it's the only two she'll have to have, but it's going to be a 3, 4, 5, 6 year process before we see if that can obliterate this large AVM. And in the meantime, we're always on our heels about hoping that she doesn't have another rupture of any kind and the radiation of side effects and all. So, it's a challenge because it's something people aren't, you hear about aneurysms. She has three of them. They're from the high flow of blood through there, and they always pose a threat as well. And so if we can shut this thing down, those should go away. But aneurysms and AVMs are very closely linked, and I've been talking a lot with Natalie Negro, Joe Negro's daughter. You may remember Joe Negro died of a brain aneurysm, and she has the Aneurysm and AVM Foundation. So right now I just started planning for next year for our first fundraiser. Well, you haven't picked a date. I've talked to Craig Shoemaker and about doing a comedy show, and he's more than willing to headline the comedy show. So, I'm just putting the wheels in motion to come up with something because so few dollars are put towards AVMs and research to eradicate these, and they get, I think it's just over $1 million a year, which is nothing, but a small percentage of the population deals with them. I think at CHOP they see 10 a year, DuPont 10 a year, So it's not a lot in adolescents because it's mostly adults by the time that they see them. So we do have a big AVM doctor in at Jefferson, but he treats the adults for the most part. So, yeah, it's been an adventure to say the least, and she's being treated at Stanford Medical Center. So we've gone out there twice for these treatments. And aside from that, she made gold honor roll all four marking periods last year in her fifth grade class, and, you know, tries hard and plays with her friends, and everything else is normal. So it's odd in that there's this thing in there that could create this problem, but on a day-to-day basis, it doesn't affect us. So, you know, aside from the anxiety that goes along with it for her, and you know, the knowing that it's there. But, you know, aside from that, we're very fortunate in that we learned about this and we could try to do something about it.
I'm sure it's a lot of anxiety on your part, too, as a parent. Now, I know that you and Kendall, I guess, set up the Facebook site, the Facebook page, Kendall's Crusade, to boost awareness. Have you heard from a lot of people? Are people, you know, now aware of it and, you know, willing to help in any way?
I think it takes time, you know, the backstory and understanding. I mean, it takes so long to even understand what an AVM is. But, you know, what I found, Chad, is people support her. She's just really one of those people who always wears a smile, and she is willing to help anybody in need and desperately wants to get some attention around AVM so she can bring some awareness to it. So, you know, right now she's about to play in a golf marathon called Dawn to Dusk to benefit the J. Wood Platt Caddy Scholarship Trust and the person she's doing it with. It's a 12-hour golf marathon, and the person she's doing it with has found somebody to match to donate to Kendall's Crusade. So, you know, we're doing little things. We're dipping our toe in the water because we think right now really getting some money to finding a cure is paramount in saving people's lives in the future.
And I got to say, I love the picture that you posted 2 weeks ago after her latest radiation treatment, her with a teddy bear on the big chair and just all smiles. That was just such a great picture.
She's a real champ. I mean, she had to lay on a table for an hour with hundreds of beams converging on her brain and play some music with a mask over her head and not move. And she never complained, and she never got down about it in such a way that she ever thought, you know, I can't do this or don't want to do this. And, you know, it's a lot for an 11-year-old, and I give her credit. She, you know, she looks forward to now not having to do that for a long time and hoping that this thing starts to shrink and eventually be gone. Because that's really the ultimate goal. If you don't obliterate an AVM, you're always at risk for another rupture.
So, again, the Facebook page is Kendall's Crusade. It's really terrific, educational, and inspirational. There are also some great support groups out there, including avmsurvivors.org. So check that out.
Yep. Great. Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah, Leslie, well, you certainly have the thoughts and prayers of all of us and your family as well.
Hey, can
Thank
we keep you.
You
for five more minutes, Leslie?
Of course.
All right,
okay.
We got something planned for you.
Yeah, Leslie, what we do as part of our show each week, Chet takes our guest, which is you tonight, and puts you in the what we call the 10 in 5 hot seat. Basically, he asks 10 questions. You have 5 minutes to answer them, and it goes by pretty quick, and he'll hit you up with all kinds of stuff. So you ready to go?
Sure, fire away.
All right.
Okay.
Keep your answers brief. That way we'll get to as many as possible. Leslie Goodell, 10 and 5. All right. As a Los Angeles native, how scary was it back in 1997 moving from the West Coast to Philadelphia to join that brand new channel at the time, Comcast Sportsnet?
Well, having moved to Pocatello, Idaho for my first job, Philadelphia felt like, you know, just moving to a tropical island because I'd been out in the middle of nowhere covering 8-man football teams who got 2 weeks off for potato harvest. So moving to Philadelphia was a dream because I did have an opportunity in D.C. as well and financially a better one at the time. But I saw what they had in mind to build Comcast Sportsnet, and it was without question once they made the offer that I could come out here and be part of an amazing sports town that I would come to Philadelphia.
And the Comcast Sportsnet still going strong 18 years later. You, of course, the first full-time female anchor in the city. Number two, the Phillies may challenge the franchise record of 111 losses this season, as we discussed, but there are some decent prospects in the minors, so how soon might they be competitive again?
I say 2 years. I think that if they show that they turn things around next year, that they'll be able to attract some more free agents as well the following year. Because remember, there's going to be some money freed up that I think they'll be able to spend as well. So you need to be a place that somebody's attracted to play in, and I think people know that this team's committed to turning things around, and these players will know that. And so I give it 2 years before you start really seeing the kind of competitive baseball you want to see and the growth we want to see.
We'll take that. Now, Barry Larkin opened up this can of worms again yesterday, saying Jimmy Rollins is absolutely Hall of Fame worthy. Do you agree regarding J-Roll and Hall or not?
I do agree. I think that Jimmy Rollins' numbers over time and the longevity in the game certainly helps those. But I think Jimmy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame when you compare him. And like Barry pointed out, he said, hey, you know, his numbers are better than mine, and I'm in the Hall of Fame. You know, that says something. And he did that with one team, and he was there to help bring the team over the hump. He was, you know, obviously the overall numbers make a difference, but I think the whole package of what Jimmy's done in his career in Philadelphia does make him Hall of Fame worthy, absolutely.
All right. I've been asking many of our guests this one lately, or a form of this question. How has Twitter changed sports reporting over the last 5 years?
Well, my concerns with Twitter are the fact that people are in such a rush to get news out there that sometimes news is falsely reported until everything is uncovered to be sure that it's an accurate report, because you are so afraid you're going to not be the first person out there with it. And that's where I think that sometimes some news reporting, and it may not even be a reporter, can irresponsibly start something that becomes an avalanche. And that's the only thing I don't like about Twitter. It has taken away from the real fact-checking part of the news. I find it funny that, you know, 10 of us could be sitting there all tweeting the same thing when it's said at a press conference, and, you know, somebody who's following all the Phillies beat writers gets the same news, you know, from everybody at the same time.
Yep.
But it's instant gratification, and it has absolutely changed the way that news is relayed to people, across the board.
Hey, your Twitter profile picture is a shot of you and legendary Phil's broadcaster, Harry Callis. Any special memory of Harry the K?
You know, yes, and I'm sure you won't be surprised to hear it was at a bar when Harry and I sat there one night in New York City when I was up there covering a game, the games for the weekend. And, you know, he and I just sat there and talked. I talked at the time about, I'd been interested in possibly doing some play-by-play, and we talked about the road to get there. And he, you know, he was very supportive. He was always very supportive of me, and both he and Wheels, and I appreciated that. And he never questioned whether or not I deserved to be there. But I had a lot of respect for the man. He loved his job, and he did it so well.
Another guy who occasionally visited a bar, Pat Burrell, will be added to the Phillies Wall of Fame in a couple of weeks. Now, he had a reputation as a fun guy, shall we say. So was Pat a better player off the field or on?
That's funny. Pat definitely had his reputation for being a ladies' man, that's for sure. He came to our wedding, my husband and I's wedding, he and Jason Michaels, it was at the Moosealoo after the after a game, and he did his share of flirting even at the wedding. It cracked me up, and of course everybody was falling all over him. Pat was one of the things that I think Pat that not everybody understands about Pat, and I wasn't a huge fan of Pat's by the end. I thought he treated the media pretty poorly, and myself and some others who were friendly with him for a long time. I at one point said to him, I just don't appreciate the way you're handling. If you're not going to do an interview, say no, but don't make me follow you around, you know. I didn't love the way he handled, but he was the next Darren Dalton. He was the clubhouse leader. There's a reason why he led the parade down Broad Street there, because by himself on the, you know, it's because he led that team. He was the guy that in that clubhouse kept them motivated and kept them. He was their leader in the clubhouse, and Jason Worth learned from him and did that when Pat was gone, and then took that skill down to Washington. And I think, you know, Chase Utley leads by example. Others lead by example, but nobody has been the leader that Pat Burrell was for this team since he left.
Speaking of fun, if I had to guess, I would figure the most fun anchor to work with at Comcast Sportsnet would be Neil Hartman, or maybe Amy Fadul. I'm going to say Neil Hartman. Am I right?
It depends. I had more fun with Neil. Neil was, we always joked, I was his, you know, I was his work wife, and you know, he was my work husband. We spent more time together than any pair has there, you know, over all these years. And I had more fun with Neil, and he was talk about supportive. You know, I didn't know the city, and Neil was great at being able to pick me up if I didn't know something. And I depended on him a lot, and he never let me down. And he was he's a wonderful person in general. And Amy's great. Amy's awesome. There's some wonderful people over there. Ron Burke, Michael Barkan, Derek Gunn. You know, I've worked with all of them for a very long time. And mm-hmm. D-Lineham, of course. You know, it's we've all been through the trenches together, and are all proud of what we built over there.
Hey, I believe you took part in the Phillies fantasy camp last winter. What experience, or what was that experience like?
Oh, put it on your bucket list. I mean, we had so much going on with my daughter, and I was, you know, hesitant to be going down. I felt guilty because she, you know, she was just recovering through everything. And my husband said, go. And I had such a ball, and I'm terrible now. You know, I've got the yips. I'm slow. I was always slow anyway, so imagine now. And I just had the best. They do such a great job. I can't say enough about what a great time I had. It should be on everybody's bucket list if you're even remotely a baseball fan.
It's on mine. Hey, your Twitter page also indicates, Leslie, that you are a wannabe chef. What is your signature dish?
Well, I just was having my husband throw the rest of the meal together as I ran up to talk to you guys, because I don't really have a signature dish. It depends. I like trying all sorts of new recipes. I pick up recipes everywhere. I have a few things. I make a pretty mean pot roast that makes the house smell good at the same time, and it's pretty much just wine and beef bouillon. But amazing how good that can smell. And I'm guacamole. I'm always the one everybody says, yeah, I have to make the guacamole.
Hmm. All right. And finally, Leslie, I know you're a big music fan. You went to Kenny Chesney's concert last weekend in Philly. Do you have a favorite artist or two?
You know, I'm a music fan in that I'm my husband loves music, and I like all genres of music. I was just listening to John Denver when we were in Monterey, because I thought that, you know, he took his plane in a nosedive into the bay right where we were looking. I had to honor the guy. I don't have a single favorite artist, but Chesney is one of our favorites to see in concert. From the tailgate to the camaraderie with the friends, we often do a large tailgate party where you were going to go to the Zac Brown Band at Citizens Bank Park coming up in August. We're going to see Billy Joel. I just enjoy the whole environment, and I enjoy getting out. And we took our kids this time, so that was fun, too.
And one final goofy follow-up. Is it true that you were a huge fan of the band that had the hit song Weird Science, Oingo Boingo?
Oh, my gosh, yes. You dug on this one. Oingo Boingo, yes. I've seen 13 Oingo Boingo concerts. I saw their last one ever. Danny Elfman has gone on to make a great name for himself in music scores, winning multiple awards for what he's done. But yes, long before people knew they were, and then when Weird Science came out and everybody came to their concert, I'm like, you don't even know who they are. You just watched the movie, you know. And yes, I was a Weird Science. I mean, I was an Oingo Boingo fan for some time.
Leslie, we do our research here on Philly Press Box Radio.
I love it. That's
thank
great.
You for playing 10 and 5, Leslie. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I very much appreciate it, guys.
All right, Leslie. Well, we really appreciate you joining us. Best of luck with your daughter and that whole situation. And hopefully we can get with you again and follow up on that sometime down the road.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time and talking about that and helping us bring
All
awareness
right.
to ABM. All right.
Okay,
thanks, guys.
Lizzie. Have a good night.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye.
Well, Chet, let's get we're a little short on our time, but let's get our trivia question out there right quick, and then we'll get moved on, okay?
Let's do it.
As we know, our prize for tonight's trivia question is an 8x10 color photo signed by the LCB line, Reggie Leach, Bobby Clark, and Bill Barber, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first caller that can call in and correctly answer our trivia question. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer this trivia question is 929-477-2855. And Chet, this one's for you, brother. We're sticking with the LCB line, okay? Bobby Clark was selected in the 1969 draft. Reggie Leach was selected in the 1970 draft by the Boston Bruins. Mm-hmm. And Bill Barber was drafted in the 1972 draft by the Flyers. Two were first-round draft picks, and one was a second-round draft pick. Can you name the second rounder?
Well, even
How's
if you
that?
Don't know it, you got a 1-in-3 chance.
You have a 1-in-3 chance. So let's go ahead and let's take a break real quick. We'll thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Hey, Chet, the night after our last show, the 76ers made a blockbuster trade that appears by all accounts to be a fleecing of the Sacramento Kings, only to come right back and get their own bad news when it was announced that Joel Embiid would miss his second straight full season. Are we headed forward, or did we take a step back?
I think we're headed forward. I love the trade. I mean, yeah, you said it. It was a fleecing. You get Nick Stauskas. You get to trade a couple of draft picks later in the future. You basically gave up nothing except the 2 second-rounders who probably weren't going to play here anyway. So great trade. The Embiid injury news, the fact that he'll need a second surgery and he'll be gone for the entire season again was a real blow to this franchise, no doubt about it. As Tom Moore told us a couple of weeks back, Embiid is almost certainly the best of the three big men on the roster, if healthy. But, of course, right now he is far from healthy, and his career, in fact, might be in jeopardy. So that's a blow, but I like what they did, you know, with the trade for Stauskas. I like the fact that they ended up getting Okafor, even if it, you know, happened by accident when the Lakers didn't take him. Okafor looks like the real deal, despite, you know, he has some shortcomings, but he can play. He's got game inside, so he'll be all right. And I think the Sixers will definitely win more than 19 or 18 games that they did the last 2 years. So I think they're moving forward. And things are going to finally start getting better this year and really get better in earnest, I think, next season.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to me, this trade, because, as we say, it appears to be a fleecing. But more importantly, what it seems like to me is you have one organization in the 76ers who's sticking with the plan, sticking with the program, and we have the Sacramento Kings who did exactly the opposite. And they're all in right now kind of thing, and they traded everything they thought they had to trade to get something right this minute, where the Sixers are staying with the plan.
Yep. Sixers, of course, have to hope that Tony Roten is healthy, because he's probably going to be their point guard this year. They may go after this guy Norris Cole, who was with New Orleans most recently. He played 3.5 years with the Miami Heat. That's Trent Cole's cousin, by the way, Norris Cole. He averaged 9.9 points per game last year with the Heat and Pelicans. Another guy who's looked pretty good in the Vegas Summer League is 6'2 guard Scotty Wilbekin, a former University of Florida star. He played all 4 years with the Gators, then played last year in Australia. He scored 9 points on Saturday, 19 on Sunday, 26 on Tuesday. I believe he had 11 points today in a loss, the Sixers losing 6 of their 7 Summer League games. They have one more on Friday. So there are still lots of questions, lots of problems. Pierre Jackson will also be back to compete with the team. He got hurt last year in the Summer League, but now he's back, and he's going to sign with them and maybe make the team. So he's got some skills also. It's going to be an interesting season, but certainly lots of questions, and we'll have to keep an eye on all things Sixers in the months ahead.
Absolutely. And you know, speaking of months ahead, it's mid-July already, Chad, and time has just absolutely been flying by. The Eagles camp opens in 2 weeks, August the 1st at the NovaCare Complex. It is upon us already. How excited are you to see the new-look Chip Kelly version of the Eagles hit the field? And by the way, the first preseason game is August 16th. That's 1 month and 1 day from right now, like when the Indianapolis Colts roll into the Link.
Well, given what's happened with the Phillies and Sixers in recent months, what do you think? I can't wait for football season, even if it's a preseason game. Yeah, I'll be watching on August 16th and then the following week and the two after that, even if they don't matter, leading up to that opening night game against the Falcons down in Atlanta in September. I can't wait. I mean, there are one hope for something good this year. Certainly a lot of question marks with the Eagles, just as there are with the Sixers moving forward. But you know, again, if these guys are healthy, we're talking Sam Bradford, Murray, and Matthews and at running back. If the guys who they picked up for the secondary can, in fact, play, you know they're going to be better than last year's defensive secondary. You know, they could do some amazing things this year. They could go 10-6 or even 12-4. Or, on the other hand, if these guys aren't healthy and can't stay on the field, we could be looking at a 6-10 year. So you just don't know.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting to me because I'm really excited about this season, but I'm not exactly sure why. You know what I mean?
It's a mystery.
Yeah, I mean, it is such a mystery. There's been so many changes from a team that wasn't all that bad to begin with, and you know, you're excited, hoping that the moves were good moves that send us over the top in the other direction. But like you say, you could sit here, you know, we could be sitting here down the road saying, what in the world happened to this thing? We're 7-9 and we're in third place, and what in the world? This thing blew up on us. And, you know, you certainly hope that doesn't happen, but, geez, you just don't know.
Nope. It's going to be fun, though. A fun ride.
Yep. Hey, and as we mentioned, we certainly have to give another huge shout-out to South Jersey's own Carly Lloyd for – leading the U.S. women to the World Cup championship in record-breaking fashion. How amazing was that? And I thought it was really cool that Sports Illustrated came out with something that they'd never done before. They were trying to figure out how to recognize this team. And what they decided to do is make 25 individual Sports Illustrated covers. Every player and the coach will have their own Sports Illustrated magazine cover, which I think is just absolutely as cool as it can be.
And also, I saw that. That is awesome.
That is awesome. And then also, you know, Mike Trout wins back-to-back All-Star Game MVPs. And as you mentioned, Frazier winning the Home Run Derby. Big day for South Jersey, or big week for South Jersey.
Yeah, and boy, I'll tell you, Mike Trout is the face of baseball right now. So that was great to see. And speaking of baseball, by the way, I loved what they did last night, bringing the four living legends out, the franchise four, or the baseball franchise four in this case. You know, Willie Mays and Johnny Bench and Sandy Koufax and Hank Aaron. That gave me a little bit of goosebumps.
Yeah, you know, I was sitting with a bunch of guys. I was at a work meeting, actually. We were sitting there, and it was on the TV. We were saying, one of the guys said, Sandy Koufax is still alive? You know, he's just, it's hard to believe. But, man, what a couple four guys that is. And, you know, it's interesting because the same guy who said about Sandy Koufax, he says, Johnny Bench has no business being in that group.
I agree. I mean, Mike. How about Mike Schmidt? Come on.
Well, you know, I think you can look at Mike and Brooks and have some argument for Brooks Robinson down there at third base, but Johnny Bench, I don't think there's a whole lot of argument at the catcher position anyway. Unless you were going to put maybe Yogi Berra out there.
Yeah, I thought we're just talking about the four. I thought as one of the four top living guys, I would go with Mike Schmidt.
Yeah, I'm thinking position wise though. If you took one out, you would have to put one in. And I'm saying Johnny Bench was in my opinion, is clearly the better catcher than anyone else, where at least in Mike Schmidt's case, there might be an argument for Brooks Robinson.
There's no argument there, Bill. I mean, defensively, maybe, but come on, offensively, not even close. Mike Schmidt all the way.
You know I like Mike Schmidt, too, but I'm trying to put some sort of logic in why Johnny Bench was there other than the game was in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, and getting back to the soccer, neither of us, of course, is a huge soccer fan. Let's put that out there. But, yeah, what that team did, the women's team, particularly the performance of Carly Lloyd and Hope Soul, just amazing, great to see, and we certainly do congratulate them on their tremendous performance and a World Cup championship.
Yeah, and, you know, I got to thinking about this as I was showing my wife, actually, the article I saw about all the Sports Illustrated covers, and I thought, you imagine everybody trying to collect all 25 of them, and you know, they're going to be pretty cool keepsakes to have the whole set of them, and then and then try to get them all signed. Those guys, those girls, they're going to be in great demand all the way down, and even the guys at the bottom of the bench, because they have Sports Illustrated covers, are going to be sought after for a long time.
Yep. Now, listen, I know people are listening, so why is no one calling? We need a caller. We want to give away this picture, this autographed picture of the LCB line signed by Clark Barber and Leach. So, we're just looking for which one of those guys was the second-round draft pick. So give us a call. Win the prize.
There it is. It's that easy. All you got to do is
929-477. Right? Yep, 929-477-2855.
Okay. Hey, and Chet, we also have an announcement to make regarding our next show, which, by the way, I know you know this, will be our 50th Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, which I think is pretty cool. We've made it that long. And we're going to celebrate with a very special guest that's touched the heart and soul of every Phillies fan and nearly every baseball fan around the world. The original Philly fanatic best friend, David Raymond, will be joining us in 2 weeks. I think that's a real, real cool way to celebrate a milestone show by having the Philly Fanatic with us.
I'm sure David will have some great stories. One question we do need to have answered is just how stinky does that Fanatic get on those 90-degree summer nights? I think Dave will probably have some inside knowledge about that, if you know what I'm saying. And by the way, can you believe that it'll be our 50th show? They said it wouldn't last. Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, well, we knew better, didn't we?
Absolutely.
All right. So looking forward to Dave Raymond. That'll be in 2 weeks from tonight, and we'll put some more information out on that. But everybody wants to talk to the Philly Fanatic, so that'll be great. Go ahead.
That's going to be a couple of days before training camp opens, as you know. So we'll be talking lots of Eagles football as well in 2 weeks.
Yes, we will. Hey, let's update the upcoming signings list over at Carl's Cards and Collectibles. And they are they're in the middle of this 20th anniversary, Chet. And we have to check with – I need to check with Carl about how many guys he's had in this year, guys and gals he's had in this year. But they're doing a lot of signings. As you recall, the former Philly Don Money was in the store last month. And now Larry Boa was in this week on Monday with another great turnout to see Boa. He's always a nice draw. And so only Hall of Famer Jim Bunning is needed to complete the really cool Veterans Stadium first poster photo that Carl put together. And Bunning will be in the store August the 1st. So that'll be the chance to get all three signatures of the first hit, the first home run, and the first victory at Veterans Stadium in that really cool picture. Mm-hmm. And now Carl's gone a little crazy because he's added a few more signings as well with Broad Street Bullies Joe and Jimmy Watson on August the 29th. And then a big one to me, Dave the Hammer, Schultz, Don Selesky, and Orris Kinderchuk on September the 19th, which, by the way, Chet, is Dallas weekend because they play the Cowboys on the 20th. And I will be in the house at Carl's Cards that day myself to meet up with those guys. So
you will.
He's also gonna have,
we may.
I will.
We may have to have a little silly press box meeting.
There you go. They'll also have Hall of Fame for the Hall of Fame collectors. Boston Bruins goaltender Jerry Cheevers will be in the store on September the 12th. So you can get more information on Carl's website at carlscards.com, on Twitter at Carl's Cards, or by calling the store at 610 789 4996.
I was in to see Carl last Saturday. I was in to see Carl on Saturday, by the way. Yeah, there was no signing at the time, but I wanted to pick up last week's deal of the week. He offers this, I guess, pretty much every week. He had two bobbleheads for a great price, and it was the Jimmy Rollins, Mike Schmidt, you know, raising of the arms together when Rollins broke the hits record for the Phillies. Plus, there was a vintage Phillies bobblehead that they gave out earlier this season at Citizens Bank Park. So I picked up those two bobbleheads to add to my collection.
Very good. Very good. And you got to visit with Big Carl as well.
Which is always a good time, of course.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. So I'm looking forward to that myself. I want to get up there. I'll be there on the 19th. And I've gotten to meet Dave Schultz before, and he's always been a pretty fun guy. So, and he's good with the fans and always good. And I know never heard a bad word about Don Selesky or Orris Kinderchuk either. So, you know, for Broad Street Bully collectors, there's five guys right there. And, you know, he just had Bob Clark and Reggie Leach and Bill Barber recently, too. So you're well on your way to collecting the Broad Street Bullies.
People love those 1970s era flyers.
Absolutely. Well, Chad, we've pretty well caught up. We only have a few minutes left. Do you have a parting shot for today?
Well, Bill, we don't talk much on Philly Press Box Radio about tennis. I'm not sure if we've ever even mentioned it in our previous 48 shows, but there's a first for everything. In a Facebook post on Saturday, I said, with apologies to Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods, Serena Williams is the most dominant athlete of the last 40 years or so. She just won her sixth Wimbledon singles championship, her fourth straight slam, the Serena Slam, as she calls it, 21st Grand Slam title overall. And she did so on a day when she really didn't even play that well, but she didn't have to. She's that good. Now, one of our pals, Angry Frank, said, hey, what about Steffi Graf? And Frank does have a point in that Steffi actually owns one more Grand Slam title than Serena and is the last woman to notch a calendar year Grand Slam back in 1988, something Serena will try to do by winning the U.S. Open a little over a month from now. Plus, Steffi won, get this, an incredible 88.7% of her matches during her career. Serena's at 85.7%, which ain't bad. Now, the two actually played each other twice in 1999. That was Steffi's final year on the tour before retiring at the ripe old age of 30 when Serena was just 17. They split their two matches. Now, during her career, Steffi at least had some competition. Gabriella Sabatini actually beat her 11 times out of the 40 that they played. Monica Seles beat her 5 of their 15 meetings. And Martina Navratilova and Steffi split their 18 head-to-head matches, 9 wins apiece. But right now, there's just no one who can consistently challenge Serena, who will turn 34 in September. 34, of course, is ancient in the tennis world, but I have a hunch that she'll be doing so a couple of weeks after completing a calendar year Grand Slam. So hats off to Serena.
Well, you certainly can't argue with your points. They're well made, and obviously she is a superstar. Jeff, I just have one quick shot. I'm not even going to go into a whole lot of detail, but as you know, I am not a fan of ESPN to begin with, and tonight, honoring someone for courage on the ESPYs is a perfectly good reason for me to not watch ESPN. There are many that warrant it, and it is not the one that's going to get it. So I'm not even going to mention his or her name, whichever name it is today. But it does not warrant a courage award, and certainly does not warrant Bill Furman's time to watch. Watch the program.
Gotcha.
So I will leave it at that. Okay, so we're at the top of the hour, so let's go ahead and thank Comcast Sportsnet Phillies reporter Leslie Goodell, Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continued support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kiss for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman, hoping you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, July 29th, as we have the original Philly fanatic Dave Raymond joining us, and our 50th anniversary show as well. You can listen to our Facebook page and like our Philly Press Box page, or on the internet at blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. And now on both iTunes and Stitcher. You can also like our Blog Talk Radio page and get all the updates as well. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.